there, Foxes fans, and welcome back to another edition of the U.S. Foxes Podcast. Coming to you live, as always, from various time zones around the United States of America. I, as always, am your host, Matt Folks, coming to you from San Diego, California. I am joined. We are almost back to normal, guys. We are just missing Jimmy tonight, but we've got first starting in New York City from the New York Foxes, Mr. Jason Becker, dropping the gloves like the Rangers tonight.
Yes, sir. I'm coming to you live from the home of the Empire State Building. What a night last night. I was at that Rangers Devils game last night that started with
a game to be at, bro.
Right at the first face-off. There was actually a sixth fight also 5 minutes into the game. It was great. I've been looking forward to that one. Knew the Devils were going to pull something like they always do. And the Rangers this year, solid team. They can score. They can fight. They can defend. They can goaltend. There's only one thing left to do right now is go out and win that Stanley Cup.
Well, more luck to you. It's been fun watching them play this year. And yeah, English listeners or anybody else around the world, I guess the football equivalent of what happened was basically, imagine if the whistle blew on a match and like all 11 players just started fighting each other, 11v11 fisticuffs. That's basically,
yeah, I think that's happened. A pretty good comparison. Yeah.
Perfect. We are also joined this evening by Mr. Chris Warner up in Del Mar, California. Chris, have you recovered from your hangover from that we had from Ollie? And
I'm probably giving once a year because I don't think I can keep up with the young people anymore. I think it was realization that a year older, the harder the hangover is the next day. But no, loved him, loved being part of that, and it was great to see him in person.
I think a lot of times we talk about the youth factor in football and really kind of forget about the youth factor of alcohol, because man, what I would give to have that 21-year-old liver again and just be able to go as hard as that boy does, because I miss those days. I'm not sure if I do, if I'm being honest.
Well, I definitely don't, mate.
I'm glad to see that Ollie can do it on both sides of the Atlantic, because we certainly were in a few sessions when I was over a couple months ago. So
you know all about it.
He's doing Leicester and doing the UK proud with his performance on the West Coast of America recently.
Yes, he definitely is. We are missing him already. But guys, let's get into the news. It's absolutely crazy the amount of shit that can happen involving this club within just a week of not recording. So this is going to be an up and down one. I guess we got to talk. I don't want to dwell on it or anything, but we'll just start with that disappointment of Bristol that we left you right before we recorded last with Ollie, that Bristol City match. And jeez, man, it was a bummer to watch, and just missed opportunity after missed opportunity. It's just essentially a good way to summarize our entire season thus far. Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah, frustrating, I think, is the kind words of saying that performance. I thought that we needed... I think, to your point, Matt, I think it epitomized the recent form that we've had. A team that's very low on confidence, a manager that appeared very low on confidence, the inability of people making decisive decisions, the fact that we didn't make a sub until when we did make a sub. And then you had that added, hey, it's Leicester City, we know what's going to happen in this moment. All of a sudden, they're going to score and we're going to lose this game 1-0. And it had every single thing that I think we've seen recently kind of manifest itself into one, and utterly disappointing. I mean, we had a real chance in that game, being the early kickoff, being the team that could set the precedent. I mean, you had Ipswich and Leeds playing later, and you just incentivized them with such a disappointing performance. And that's what kills me about that performance is it's nothing. Yes, it's just that combination of we were so, in my opinion, I just think we were garbage, and ultimately, I just feel sorry for, I mean, Ollie got off a plane 24 hours later, traveled 4 hours down to Bristol to watch that. You had the Leicester end was just full of people doing that. And I think, again, it was also the first time I think you've seen as well, potentially at the end of the game, the Leicester fans show their frustration towards the team a little bit. And I think they thoroughly deserved that. They had every right to do that, mate. I just thought it was an absolute shocker and just not what you need at this time of the season.
It really was. It was so disappointing. And just, you could feel the rage and the anger and everything built up just coming out. And man, it just was a bad scene. Definitely, Jason.
Yeah, I think this was a game where it's a real turning point. Hoping it's a real turning point for Enzo and for the squad, because styles are great. It's wonderful to have a philosophy of football, but we're now at the tight part of the season, especially after the run that we've been on, where moral victories don't freaking matter anymore. Right? Like, we're at the business end of the season. It's about getting the result. It's not about proving some point and playing in some idealistic way, because that's not going to get you promoted out of this division at this point. And it's been a bad run. And I think even Enzo's supporters, and I've been very much a fan of Enzo this year, like, he's still a young manager. He needs to understand when you need to be practical. And I think that game was a perfect example of it's not working. Your striker, even though he's the greatest to ever do it, he's not putting the ball in the net. We need to do something else. We need to try something else. Oh, let's wait until we go down a goal. Let's wait until the 75th minute to make a change. It's just because you think that we're theoretically playing some sort of better football. Well, the scoreboard's not lying there. And I think then after the game, to see a guy like Guillaume Balague lecture Leicester fans and show how superficial and biased his interest is in Leicester City, just to be the one man Enzo PR machine. It was just so tone deaf, and I'm looking at that thinking I really hope that Enzo doesn't buy this and believe in this right now. It was almost word for word what James Maddison said after the Southampton loss, and that attitude is just
you're bang on.
Yes, I mean, David Bevan had a great tweet where he responded to that and just went on Google Translate and took the James Madison tweet and posted it in Spanish. Yeah. It's one of the greatest tweets of all time. But no one wants to hear from this guy, and it was really worrying. Is this what Enzo thinks? This is not going to be good. It's. We're on the brink of a historic collapse, and to then just act like things are okay and getting a moral victory and to pretend like fans shouldn't care about the result at this point of the season is just to me I'm sorry, dude. Go back to Fickle Fuckum United or whatever the hell that thing is. That this guy,
yeah, his GoFundMe FC,
get out of here. You clearly don't care. You're not watching the games. You don't care about Leicester. You just care about making your mate look good. So I get why fans were a little frustrated after that game. Credit to James Justin for actually going up to the away fans and hearing him out and taking some responsibility there. So I was really nervous going into the Norwich game based on how they played at Bristol City.
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, Guillaume, I don't even know what to say there. The taste that was left in my mouth after listening to him on Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast, where the entire time he was just acting like he was better than the whole fucking function that was going on, and the questions how dare you question it, you know what I mean? It you're spot on. He's literally just been a mouthpiece thus far for him, and that was just downright insulting. So anything else that you want to say about that?
Oh, about that? Yeah, I'll keep talking about that guy. I mean, like, all he did was just show that, like who wants to hear from some weirdo who can't even wash one of his shirts and rewear it a second time?
Like, Chris, what about you, man? Anything else on Bristol or that's it, the unwashed shirt situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've summed it up nicely, boys. Yeah. It is frustrating because it's, as Jason points out, not only is it deja vu for the Madison tweet kind of, but it's deja vu with the way that the media responds to these situations for Leicester City. It's a carbon copy of, hey, Brendan, it's not Brendan's fault. Brendan's too good. The team's too good. Like, when all this noise from the outside continues to penetrate into the team, like, there is going to be that level of arrogance. And it, I mean, we end up then, yeah, I mean, It's frustrating. It would be nice if someone in the Leicester media would come out and say, hey, that was absolute awful. Like, we just don't have that. I mean, that's not Tanner. It's not anybody else. We just don't really have that person in the media. So it does get frustrating as a fan when all you're hearing from the outside is, to your guys' point, just defense, defense, defense.
The part that I hate is that he fucking acts like, you know, it was like, again, going back to that podcast they did, he acted like 90% of the fan base were the ones yelling get it forward, when in reality it's a pretty small minority. Am I wrong there, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, look, the home support has been frustrating, and they've been frustrated too. There was earlier in the season certainly a lot more of the carrot forward. The home atmospheres have been pretty flat through the season, but again, you're getting this from a guy that doesn't even really watch the games, right? But I wouldn't say that that is so unique to Leicester. You know, their away fans go up and down the country singing football in the library, right? So that's just the way a lot of home support is nowadays. It's just the way that football is nowadays. But yeah, no, look, we've seen the images. We've seen fans leaving in the 80th minute. We've seen like half empty King Power when the team is 1-3-1. But I will say that like the away support has been incredibly supportive of the team and of Enzo. And when the team has needed a bit of a push at home lately, I think the home fans have done that as well. Look, Neil Warnock could be the manager of this team this year, and he should get this side promoted, right? Like, it shouldn't take the greatest manager and the purest football philosophy to get this team promoted.
About Jesse Marsh?
I think Enzo has done a great job leading up to this season, but you know, he's not exactly, you know, the Messiah here. This is a team that on paper is just a lot better than I think any other side in the division, and also on balance sheets, a lot more expensive than the rest of the season, as the rest of the league, as we've seen this year. So it shouldn't take some incredible football god to get this team to finish in an automatic promotion spot. It's not, I'm not saying it's easy work, but, you know, I think that the average fan, you know, gets what he's trying to do, just wants maybe a little bit more entertainment when they go to the games. And look, man, like everyone's looking for something different out of football. And you know, I think though that that Bristol City game was a real, like, that was an important moment. That was a watershed moment here, because you've got some of the staunchest Enzo defenders even saying, like, all right, man, like, we got to be practical here. What's going on? Like, we got to get a point. We got to get at least a point. We need to get 3 points. There was another game earlier this year, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, get a draw on the team saying, oh, it was a good point. Yeah, like, but everything's in context. Like, yeah, that would be a great point in September and October. That's a fantastic point. But now when you're in a four-way place for the automatic promotion spots, it may not be good enough.
Yeah, I think earlier in the year, we were all like, yes, of course, this is the Enzo way. He has changed the way everybody has played. And to his credit, man, we've seen the way that he's converted Ricardo, the way that he's, converted Ndidi. It's been absolutely insane. But exactly what you're saying, Jason, I think we all were just kind of denying what could have, you know, in the back of our minds, anybody could coach this team. That's why I jokingly said Jesse Marsh when you were talking about Neil Warnock. So it's something that maybe we were giving him a bit too much credit for, Chris. I don't know. I don't want to think that, but at this point, his reluctance to change anything is just so fucking glaring.
Yeah, I struggle because it seems like often Enzo Ball is a binary decision. It's either it's a result or it's a performance, as you guys have been saying. And I think back to some of the best Leicester games that I think of recently, and half the time we get a good result and the performance is not necessarily the greatest. And that's what we need to learn. That this team, we need to learn how to win ugly. We need to learn how to get that scrappy 1-0, that fight
Pearson kind of football,
get that
mentality,
man, back. Like, and that's, I think, what's the most frustrating thing. Like, foundationally and fundamentally and philosophically, do I think Enzo has been a godsend to this club? Yes, he's been able to play a style of football that I really enjoyed as watching. But at the same time, there are points to what you guys say where there's a frustration level to it, and it does seem like we do take the performance often over the result. I think to myself, when they've got the little iPad, you know, where they're watching the game often, like, is that really just a bar that's got XG on it for Enzo? And he just really enjoys the fact that, like, we've got such great XG that it's like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll eventually score. It feels like that mentality at times. And to your guy, the performance at Bristol, I mean, we didn't make a substitution until after we'd gone 1-0 down. I mean, if that's not a panic change, I don't know what is. And my question is, if you thought for the first 73 minutes that the answer to the getting a goal was the players on the 11, then you should have stuck to your guns and not changed it. I don't understand why immediately after the goal he changes it. It says to me that it's a manager low on confidence and lacking at times the key decision-making skills that are needed in this league. And to echo your guys' point, I remember as a season ticket holder back in the day, when we first got relegated, first year with the KP, Mickey Adams, a guy that, yes, to your guys' point, somebody that was required to get us back into the Premier League. It wasn't the sexiest football. It was definitely not the greatest football to watch. But ultimately, he knew when we needed to play. We knew when we needed to play dirty. He knew when we needed to go and scrap out a win. And we did that year. And so he's got 8 games. I mean, we can talk more about whether or not we see Enzo as part of this team based on what's happened in the news for Leicester as kind of another wider topic. But the guy's got 8 games now to really kind of dig deep and find something to get us promoted.
Yeah. And I think the substitution showed someone who is so hellbent on his philosophy, because the changes are just like for like, right? There's no change to the shape with those substitutions. I think you bring up a good point and probably something we should talk about, because I but when we talk about the future, because I think that the what we thought a Premier League season would look like if we get promoted this year is suddenly a lot different, I think, than what the reality is going to be based on the news from the accounts. I think that the Norwich game deserves some time because it was a very good performance and things a little differently. 100%. I mean, although we played a lot to the same kind of way that we've been playing, but just maybe a little bit quicker. And there was a real opportunity for things to turn sour very quickly after giving up that early goal. And the side showed that, you know, they were still in this very bizarre by Wagner to They were giving us a lot of trouble early in the game. They scored the goal and then just like shit themselves, just freaking panicked. And then we were all over them for the rest of the game, which was great. It was nice to see Doyle back on the left side. I think JJ's had a little rough go there. Ricardo shook off a bit of that rust. And one thing that's been, you know, the wingers have been really quiet lately. Mavididi, Fatawu forcing a lot, but they're getting the ball in situations and it's just that one on two, like all day long. And it's been happening all over the league, everyone we play. And it did look like there was a real intent to get the ball to them early. And they had a lot more space and they were a lot more effective, I think, because of that. And I think that's part a big reason why we wound up winning that game and creating the chances that we did.
No, I was going to echo that point. I thought second half we were. I mean, defensively, the goal is shambolic defending. And I mean, if there's a story to the season again, it's like we haven't learned how to defend. We've at times we've looked better, but fundamentally we still suffer from the same mistakes as we've done over the past couple of years. I thought second half we were good. I thought KDH was very good. One of his strongest games for us. I think there was just that sense of relief, wasn't there, around the KP at the full-time whistle. There was like that huge roar. And you know what? You actually saw it on the bench as well, like the images of Enzo celebrating the goals.
Mavididi like, jumping in his arms, bro.
Yeah, it was such a weight that was off their guys' shoulders. And, I was with Jason. Like, you felt good for a few hours. You know, with Leicester City, like it's just going to only be a few hours.
Hold on. I want to say my piece on this game as well before we go into that fucking shit.
Hit us with it.
For me, guys, I think I can sum this up with one thing, and that's five subs. Five fucking subs.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And there have been so many times this year where teams have gotten the better of us because they've had fresher legs out there. And Enzo said something a few weeks ago that was really concerning to me, where he said that now at this point in the season, you've got to just stick with your guys. And it's like, there's a reason why Leeds teams for so many years, like their legs would fall off at the end of the season and they would crash and burn after such a hot start. They were just dead. And you cannot do that to this team. And we have to play an extra game over others. So we're going to have a little bit of less rest. In this run-in, you need to keep your guys fresh. And sometimes that's as important or if not more important in this division when it comes to getting a result. You can play the football, you can set up the way you want them to set up, but if the other team has more energy out there, it's going to make a huge difference in this division.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here, though. I don't think he wanted to do it. I just think the team was in the red zone. I just think you play Friday and then you play Monday. And I just think there's at that point, guys are going to be entering that injury zone. And I think that I'm of the opinion it was probably more out of necessity than it was out of a conscious tactical decision. I will be very happy to be wrong. And I'll be very happy to see on Saturday that he does five subs. But given what I've seen over the past 39 games, I just don't know whether that's in him. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, Chris.
Well, we beat a team, Norwich for shit. Let's get that straight. And but that's in this league. That's the kind of game that you have to win.
I think Norwich is pretty good, Matt. I don't know if I've.
I thought they were crap.
I think since January they've been pretty good. And I think it was a really good win. It was a really good win.
It's a good win. And I also think the plus two goal difference right now, guys, with the way that this league is ending up, that could be huge. Shout out to Wout Foss. He had a hell of a game. It was good to see him really fucking have a little bounce back, in my opinion. Ricardo obviously was insane. Doyle, to your credit, was really good. So the fight apparently is there, guys, and I think that's all that can matter going forward.
Yeah, and I think what we're about to talk about is separate than these players on the pitch and the manager, and I think the players definitely need all the support they can get over the next month or so as we close out the season.
For sure. Before we do that, though, I did want to just get our boy Ollie. He sent in his weekly video before we get into the depressing shit. I know that everybody would love to hear from our guy on how he was feeling after that.
Matt, here is Foxy's hope all is well. I'm back where I belong in the ghetto of Weston, which, by the way, looks absolutely gorgeous under these blue skies and the sun. Seems like I've come back from San Diego with the sun as well, which is gorgeous. Sorry if you've got rain over there this week, Matt. I do apologise, but it's our turn now. So yeah, a double header for you this week. Not going to divulge too much into that Bristol City game, because what a calamity that was. Yeah, really nothing at all good to say about that game, really, is there? From the 20th minute onwards, you just knew that it was going to be a shit show and that we were going to lose. But yeah, a couple of days later, we've just turned it around and beat playoff hope in Norwich 3-1, who were a decent side. But yeah, something clearly changed in the lads and the way that they came out. And most of it, the home atmosphere was brilliant today. We spoke about a couple of weeks ago that the home atmosphere is, in last week's live pod, that the home atmosphere has just not been there since that Coventry at home game, and that was so much better, so much louder. Even when we went 1-0 down, we gave up for a little bit, but then we started getting chances and building on it, and the lads just, yeah, the lads heard us for sure. So yeah, that was so much better today. Yesterday, sorry, and hopefully with 7 more FA Cup finals to go, we can have seven more victories just like that, because it's what we need. Obviously, seeing Ipswich and Leeds not wanting to bow down, getting late winners and fighting till the very end, which is just what we need to do. It's what title chasers do. So yeah, hopefully we can keep it up. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of these now, man. It's gonna be a close one. It really is, because I don't see them dropping any points anytime soon. And if we play like we did yesterday, second half of yesterday, and the last 15 minutes or so of yesterday, I can see us being the exact same. But let's hope we can keep it up. Up the city.
Big thanks to Ollie, as always. And yeah, I think he just echoed pretty much how we were all feeling there, Jason.
Damn, it looked like he was still in San Diego.
I know, right? Blue skies and birds, man. That was it. Weston was looking gorgeous.
He's right, though. Leeds, Ipswich, Southampton, these sides are not going to just go away quietly. They are fighting to the end. We are looking at 7 finals.
Yeah, that was a perfect way to put that. So let's just, I guess, just hold our nose and jump into this bullshit. The news broke, obviously, after Norwich. We're all feeling great. That, you know, basically there's 10 points deduction coming, essentially. Is that what it sounds like, Jason? I don't know, depending on what the lawyers can figure out.
We don't know yet. I think that, so long, I guess to wrap it up, compared to what we've seen with the points deduction decisions, is that we have run a pretty big deficit over the last accounting period and then over the 3 years. And so we can only really be at 105 million in losses, and we're at almost 300 million in losses over that time. So it's not good. And if we look at punishments for sides like Nottingham Forest, Everton, what are we looking at? 4 points and 6 points, respectively. And these are sides that cooperated. And Leicester really has not been cooperating with this effort. So we might be looking at a pretty hefty sanction from the Premier League if we should go up next season.
And that,
yeah,
and that,
I'm just saying that's with, we already know that the EFL is smelling blood and they want a piece of our ass as well for whatever they can get. So either way, it's not looking great.
It's not looking good. Yeah. And as it's been, you know, reported pretty widely, the amount of losses you can incur as an EFL club are smaller, right? And so it puts you in even bigger trouble with them. And so it's important that we, for the future, that we get promoted no matter what it takes, because it'll give us more room to try to get the budgets right, and also allow us to make more money. But there's a serious problem here, and at the club, we can get into the rules of whether or not they're fair, and I think they are BS in a lot of ways, but these clubs made their own bed by being bullied into voting for them. But they have been in place now for a few years. We've known that they've been in place and really have not done anything to get ourselves on the right side of those rules. It's been just, I don't know. It's like Emperor's New Clothes. Like, you know what? Hey, there's no problem. It's that meme where like that the house is on fire and that dog is saying everything. I sound like such a like a boomer right now.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah, like it's just there's been nothing. Like, we have racked up the highest wage bill, which I know you need to do in order to promote. I mean, in order to compete. But you know, we've been paying a bunch of crap players for many years. We budgeted for an eighth place finish, got relegated, had to pay $20 million out to Brendan Rodgers. It's just one disaster after another. And then, you know, we know we're in the shit. It didn't strengthen the squad last year. And then we spent money on, you know, we bring in Christensen, we bring in Suter, we bring in, it's just like, the decisions have just been so bad, and relegation is just completely unacceptable last year. And then now to see this on top of that, and to see how badly the finances have been managed and how little interest there has been and how little concrete, you know, action has been taken to get on the right side of these rules is it's just another like slap in the face, I think. And I just don't see how it's this, how it can go on like this anymore. I don't see how the decision makers who are responsible for this can continue to be in positions where they're making these horrendous moves again.
Right. I don't see any way that at the very least someone doesn't lose their position or job at the top. There's no way, like they always say, you know, the body rots from the top, right? And the head. So someone in charge here that has allowed this to fester and get as bad as it has, unbeknownst to the fans and the public and the media, has to be held accountable. Because, man, I mean, we, without getting into it too much, we have some friends, you know, that know things about the club and the inner workings of this club. And we have been hearing for literal years, multiple years now, that there is just so much overspending going on needlessly in the inner workings of the club. Basically, it was being run as if we were a Big Six club and we were going to be the next Big Six club, which I think we all as fans, you know, saw ourselves as. And they were essentially trying to run the club as if it were already there without having the wherewithal and financial backing to be there. Does that kind of click with you, Jason?
Well, the financial backing is there, right? So King Power's financial commitment to the club has been clear. Yeah.
Sorry. I guess I said that wrong, whereas we were not spending within the rules, I guess, that we're allowed to spend, which is a whole other fucking topic.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because the things that got us to that point were and gave us our initial, you know, success. I mean, you can argue we played fast and loose with some of the rules when we were in the last time we were in the championship and got promoted, but it wasn't that egregious. You know, buying smart, scouting well, getting value, and we just abandoned that. Like getting smart players, getting experience in on freeze, having a good mix of skill and experience and grit. Like we just abandoned that model and that philosophy. And for so many years, we were the best run club in the land, or at least everyone thought so. And it certainly looked like that for a long time. And then we've suddenly gone from that to bringing in Danny Ward for $12 million, having five goalkeepers on the books when you're already in such a deep financial hole this year, by signing Connor Cody and paying him a high wage and then not using him, by having guys like Suter just sitting around, just taking up space and money like we did with so many players over the last few years. We've just completely abandoned what made us successful. And just, there was just no vision, no plan throughout the club for like what we're going to do. It's just the only thing, I mean, if you look at all the counts and you look at what's been going on, the only plan seems to just be make the squad big and pay stupid wages. There's just, doesn't seem to be any other plan aside from that. And that's why it was really refreshing to see Enzo come in, because he came in and our sign, we were making signings with intent. Although Connor Cody at the time, it sounded like it seemed like a great signing. I don't know, just really don't know what's going on there, but maybe we should even been spending that money this year, because we're heading towards another year of serious losses. And at some point, like, you just can't do this anymore. The leagues will penalize the shit out of you until you have no choice but to get on the right side of these rules, because you'll just find yourself just dropping down, dropping down, dropping down. What can you do next year if you lose 10 points, even if you lose 6 points, but then you have to get on the right side of these rules and you have to have a fire sale at the club and you can't sign new players? Like, it's just not good, man. I just don't. It's unacceptable for the club to be run like this. It's completely unacceptable, and it's embarrassing too. Like, here we are talking about suing Everton and maybe suing Forest last year when we were a bigger culprit than they were. And if I don't, I'm not trying to put ideas in anyone's heads, but if I'm an EFL chairman of an EFL, of a championship club, and I have my house in order, and this Leicester team comes in to the division with such an unfair financial advantage, right, by being so far on the other side of the rules, I'm saying, F those guys. I want to see action now.
100%. And I think that's why I'll send it to you, Chris, here in a second. But I think that's has been the most disappointing and the most heartbreaking thing for me, is because I fucking was literally defending us till I was red in the face to some of the Everton supporters about how, yeah, we got fucking relegated because we did it right and we spent our money right and we didn't, you know, break the rules like you fuckers did. And then to turn around and just have your loyalty just slapped in your fucking face by Whalen and Rudkin, it's just heartbreaking, Chris.
I think a few things. I've got so many comments about this. To Jason's point, I'm 100% with you. I mean, what's the famous phrase? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. It feels like we're in the most vulnerable glass house at this moment in time, and we're trying to throw a rock. The next thing I'll say is, and I think Jake on the Big Strong Leicester Boys made a really good comment about this, is there's obviously a disconnect between the business and football sides of this football club. I mean, if you go and read the statement on the Leicester website of the news article, the first paragraph goes, the club's investment in its first team playing squad, a strategy reflected in eight previous seasons of high performance in the top flight, was the first time not matched by the on-pitch results. I mean, if that isn't saying, hey, we did our job on the business side, it was just a football lot that weren't good enough, then what? That's just a toxicity and it's just a blame game. It's just, I'm blaming the football. We don't want that in a football club. We need unity across all departments. And then the last thing I'll say, Matt, to your point, which I think was really interesting, was this mentality that we had about, oh, we're going to be a big club. I mean, you look at the third paragraph down, commercial revenues increased by $1 million or less than $1 million in 2022. Sponsorship revenue was up $1 million. The biggest thing that went up was the gate receipts. Why is that? Because we're charging more. Like, the only way we were able to generate revenue was to charge our fans more and more money. And we weren't, if we were a big six club, going out there and doing those things of trying to grow the fan base, come to the US like every other Premier League team does, try and build more out here, get more people buying the merchandise, get more people invested in the football club. Like, we're investing in the people in the KP, but there's no results to suggest that it was very good. And I'll say the last thing is around the Rodgers situation. Like, what frustrates me the most is we're complaining in this statement that we got rid of what Rodgers, and he was the result, and that was a 20 million problem that we had to add onto the accounts. Like, it's 20 million. We lost 126 million. Like, that's less than 20%. We were still going to be in the mire if we'd sat Rodgers in December or we'd sat Rodgers in January. I don't understand how this football club thinks that we could have found the 50 million under what, a sofa, that would all of a sudden allow us to be within financial fair play. Like, I just don't get it. Like, we could have seen this forecast at the beginning of last season. We could have played the risk game and said, okay, if we're going to sack Rodgers, it's going to cost us 20 million. But at least if we sack him in January, it gives us a chance to get higher up the league and get more revenue and hopefully make the number less. Like, we were always going to have points deducted from this statement. It's just, how is the decision-making enabling us to it's just suddenly appeared, when it's like, no, mate, the forecasts have been saying this all year that we're going to have such a bad result. So it's flabbergasting. It's mismanagement. It's toxicity. It's everything that you don't want in a football club that's coming through at this moment in time, Matt. And it sucks because we're just upping gate receipt, upping ticket prices, limiting the fans that can come, making us buy memberships. And it's like, okay, well, why should I trust you with that money that I'm putting into the football club to do the right thing? Because it seems at the minute, based on these things, we're not doing that.
Yeah. I think you're so right about so much there, Chris. The statement was delusional. It was just delusional to act like, had the season gone a little bit better, everything would have been fine. That's really what the statement said. We were so far in the hole, it wouldn't have mattered. It clearly wouldn't have mattered. I have to, I feel a little bit worse for, I mean, I don't feel bad for Brendan Rodgers, but it's clear that there is no communication, that everyone's just not on the same page at the club. And I, now, after seeing what we've seen, like, it's hard not to believe that Brendan Rodgers wasn't told about what was going on in the January transfer window and before the season, and that he thought we would be able to buy players, and then he was blindsided by this. There's nothing in these accounts and nothing in the way that we've seen the club operate that shows any difference. It shows anything any different. So, I hate to be like this, and I don't want to like talk to our listeners like this, but we're probably in for some years of pain, man. Like, it's going to take a long time to get out of this hole. And yeah, if we're going to try to get it all right, it's going to be a difficult year if we get promoted, and it's going to be a really, really tough year if we blow it, if we blow this and don't go up.
As if
we needed more stress in our lives, right, bro? Like, as if a promotion battle is not stressful enough. Throw in that, oh, by the way, your club might financially melt down, and who knows what the fuck could happen to you going forward if you don't get promoted. Nerve wracking is like a nice way to put it.
Yeah, and this is, I'll just say this, like, well, just a couple of things. There are fans trying to make a difference. I know that there are some campaigns happening right now, and there are some efforts to, for that fans are starting up to make sure that we are better informed, and that fans now will start having a say in what goes on in the club. And I absolutely think that's necessary. People may have seen the I've joined the Foxes Trust hashtag, and people giving their reasons for joining the Foxes Trust, and that hopefully will be the trust will kind of turn into a little bit more of what it was during the early 2000s, when the trust played such a key role in helping to save Leicester City Football Club. And certainly things have gone a little differently with the trust now for many years. And there is a serious interest that fans have now in kind of lifting the trust back up and making it an effective voice for fans. And I would also say this, like, we have 7 cup finals coming up, or is, I haven't even counted the games right now. However many games we have left, they're all cup finals. We've got this news hanging over us on top of that. If there is a local group of Leicester fans by you, or if you're thinking about starting a group, I gotta say, like, it's a lot better to go through any of this when you have people around you and you have your fellow Leicester fans next to you and you're watching the games with them. I'm telling you, like, it sucks to be home and reading all this news and dealing with all this stuff and seeing all the texts come through, but it does feel a hell of a lot better when Saturday morning comes around and you're watching games with your friends.
Such a great point, dude. And yeah, 7, there are 7, right? You are dead on. 7 games left.
I can't cut any higher than that, though. I ask you
to essentially define the future of this football club that we all cheer for and follow.
Yeah, damn, like, the fucking future of the club is on the line right now.
Well, guys, I don't even know. Like, it's Chris had to drop off, by the way. If you guys, we're not ignoring him. He had to drop off and run. We were keeping him long tonight with this discussion.
Yeah, too long.
We got to just say it's all on the line now. So, yeah, you're exactly right, Jason. Like, if you guys can get together, do whatever you have to do to come together to support the team in any way possible, whether that's just bringing, you know, 2 or 3 of your friends to your local bar and asking them to turn the game on if you can get it on somehow. Like, that's it. We just got to come together on this, because that's all we can fucking do at this point. And especially on the United States side. And man, it's all big from now on.
Yeah, man. You know what? Hey, look, if the commercial side of the club ain't going to do it, like, I'm sorry. It's like, it's up to us.
100%.
It's up to us as supporters and fans to do what we can.
I was just going to say, let's dive into this Birmingham match coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
Saturday is the game. What time you got in New York City?
10 a.m. New York. We'll take
Yeah, 7 a.m. on West Coast. We'll take it as well. And, man, a Birmingham side that's much different than the last time we played them in Wayne Rooney. And, frankly, I'm feeling great about this.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about how much of a mess things are. It could be worse. You could be Birmingham City and go, you know, John Eustace to Wayne Rooney to whoever the hell is. I don't even know who's managing them right now, to be honest. Yeah, look, if you look at the run-in, I'll take our run-in against Leeds or against Southampton or Ipswich. I think we have, on paper at least, the best run-in to finish the season. So this season is still very much in our hands, unless the EFL wants to pull something, of course. But in terms of football and getting points, we're in the driver's seat here. And this is a great opportunity, I think, for us to get 3 more points. And, you know, promotion is as imperative as ever right now. And this is a really good opportunity for us.
I agree. I think we have a very good opportunity to score some goals on this side, guys, because they are not a prolific scoring side. Hopefully Enzo is going to have a very good setup heading into this thing that takes advantage of the fact that we can press on them and hopefully make things insanely uncomfortable.
Sorry, yeah, I agree. It's talking about, you know, being uncomfortable. I have to acknowledge that my microphone's probably been echoing the whole time. I'm probably driving Matt crazy as he's, you know, using his headphones here and probably hearing me in what sounds like 4 years right now. So, but we do need to, you know, do what we can to make it as uncomfortable for Birmingham City as possible. It's encouraged. I mean, I don't know what the atmosphere is going to be like on Saturday. You know, there could be, it's going to be a lot of pretty emotional. I think there are going to be folks on, you know, that have all whole different range of feelings.
Yeah.
This week would have been Rishai's 66th birthday as well. It's a, you know, it's an emotional week for the club. It's encouraging to see Union FS come out and say, you know, get your spring, your scarves, get them up before the game when your smiling is on. Let's like start it off right. And hopefully that continues, at least, you know, once the football is being played, the players do need our support. And I know that our fans will come up with effective ways to be heard about everything, all the other news that came out this week.
100%. Yeah, I was going to mention today's Vichai's birthday. Definitely wanted to mark that. And you saw around the club today, people, you know, recognizing that. And there's really good to see. And I think that's just the perfect thing to build on heading into a very tough week against a side that is, I mean, as crazy as it is at the top, guys, take a peek at the fucking bottom because it's nuts down there too. And there are so many teams that are just trying to survive. So unfortunately, we're playing one of them. So that always throws a wrench into the gears and hopefully we can come out and just take care of business.
It's the beautiful thing about this division and having the playoffs and having the automatic promotion spots and then the relegation spots. There's so many games mean so much through the whole season.
Beautiful / terrifying. Let me ask you this, Jason. New York City, do they have a Birmingham group?
Do not. I don't know of a Birmingham City group. Certainly a very big, at least at the factory, a decent-sized Villa group, but have not seen the blue side of that city gather in mass.
Yeah, same here in San Diego. But yeah, guys, on that note, I think that'll pretty much do it for this week, unless you have something else to or some last words that you want to throw out to the listeners, Jason.
Look, I'll just say this. You know, we've been in tight spots before, and it's one of the things that I think just makes being a Leicester City supporter mean more and makes the highs so high, is that there's always something going on here. And it's always some kind of crazy story. And we're always off on some ridiculous odyssey as a football club. And that's why when things go well at Leicester, when we have our success, it just like feels so much bigger and better than when it happens anywhere else.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I was talking to my wife this week and, you know, she's been a fan since we started dating in like the 2013 season. And so she watched, you know, Big Nige and Let's Get Promoted. And she's pretty much only known Leicester in the Premier League. And I was talking to her and I was like, you know, really, with this, as sad as it is to say, we're kind of getting back to our identity of just a fucking heart attack club. And I don't know. It's kind of like the ducks returning to the pond in a horrible, horrible way, Jason. So all we can do is hope for the best. And yeah, pray to God and cross your fingers, guys. And grab your buddy and cheer with him. And let's all do all that we can to support our Leicester. Definitely hit up Fox's Trust. Check the hashtag and definitely throw your support in there. Some of the best people in the world and the people behind that It's an entire another podcast in itself to describe how the club was saved, etc. In the very, very, very dark days. These are dark days, but nowhere near the midnight that we were at one point.
Yes. So we'll probably go into a little bit more detail about that and maybe the evolution there. But things are brewing around Leicester, and fans are looking to make a difference, and to me that's only a good thing.
100%. I guess, guys, at the end of the day, this club is bigger than any director or business director or whatever the hell you want to say. So this club is you listening to this podcast right now. This club is every major goal that you can remember. So this club lives in your heart, and it doesn't live on a fucking Excel spreadsheet. And I think that's the most important thing to remember going forward, guys. On that note, I think that will do it for this week's edition of the US Foxes podcast. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to listen to us, and please continue reaching out, guys. I love reading your messages about and seeing the photos of when you're walking your dogs and stuff. That literally means the world to me when I see that you're listening, and honestly, more than ever, us coming together is it's everything. So for Jason, for Chris, for Jim, and Ollie, I am Matt, and we will see you next time on the US Foxes podcast. Cheers.